Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Peter Glore has enjoyed a 20-year career as an executive for UBS, PwC, and Deloitte. He divides his time between the MIT Sloan School of Management, Helsinki University of Technology, and the University of Cologne. And he's been growing his startup company, Galaxy Advisors. Peter is co-author of the book Cool Hunting and is the author of a new book, Cool Farming. Peter, welcome to Edgewise.
Hi, great to be here.
In Cool Farming, Growing and Nurturing Cool Trends, you made the quantum leap from cool hunting, finding cool trends. What are the key principles of cool farming?
It all boils down to finding the attributes of cool. For each community, we have other things which are cool. And once we have found those, we need to let the community take over.
So the community has its own definition. Your definition of cool, Peter, is probably not my definition of cool.
Exactly.
But it's being true to that group's definition of the word cool.
Yes. And for race cars, cool has a very different definition than for computer lovers and so on.
Of course.
In cool farming, we have to become members of this community. We have to really immerse ourselves in the swarm and understand their definition of cool.
Right. If you don't have that, you lack the context.
Exactly.
What's the connection between cool farming and bees?
For me, the bees are great role models of both cool hunting and cool farming. In a sense, cool farming really is a very logical progression from cool hunting in that if we want to be cool farmers, we also have to be cool hunters. And bees, they find the honey, they hunt, and then the bee comes back and she farms, she recruits her sisters, and then the entire swarm gets excited and they follow her to the new pasture.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you explain the collaborative innovation process?
That's really the key point of cool farming.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a four-step process. The creator, the collaborative innovation network, the learning network, and the interest network. What we have to start with, somebody with an unbelievably cool idea, the creator, the one that kicks off the cool idea, whether that's Steve Jobs, whether it's Oprah Winfrey, it's the queen bee.
Right.
And then we have the COIN, the collaborative innovation network, and that's the small group of the most dedicated bees.
Okay.
They follow the queen bee and they become the core swarm, the core group that develops the cool product, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's the web, whether it's
an iPad.
Exactly. Great example. Any of those things. After that, there are two more steps that really get the cool idea over the tipping point. The next one is the collaborative learning network. That's the group of people that are friends and family of the coin that help the product shape and mold with the right attributes of cool for the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a few hundred people, the best feedback system one can think of. Some of these learning members might become members of the core coin,
right,
and the others go out and tell about the greatness of the idea. And then we have step number four, and that's the interest network. They are the ones that pick up on the idea, that start buying the iPad, the iPhone, using the web, the Linux operating system, and so on.
I'm imagining an orbital model where you have that burning hot sun or core, and you have planets in orbit around it, and the ones that are closer are warmer. And in your particular case, some of them drop into different orbits, but they're all in orbit around this idea.
That's why I'm also very much in love with the concept of the galaxy, because we have those planets, we have the sun, the solar system, we have the creators, which are the suns, and then we have the planets circling around, the coin members, and all together, they spread this cool new thing out. And cool farming means facilitating the process, helping nurturing the members of the coin,
right,
support the creators, help the collaborative learning network to be more successful, and in the end, help the interest network to really embrace the idea.
Do you believe this approach presents to the developers of a new concept or idea a clearer picture of what an audience or a group needs than, let's say, a more traditional focus group or something like that?
In a sense, it's a self-organizing focus group because you have the queen bee. She does her waggle dance and then the swarm comes. With the focus group, the difference is I choose the members of the focus group. With the swarm, they self-select. And that's why you have to be a member of the swarm. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Right.
It's so much more sustainable. I have been a member of a few startups over my career. And the ones which work, like collaborative innovation networks, have been far more successful
Sure.
than the ones that are overly managed. this entire collaborative innovation framework is a self-organizing way of managing a cool idea, turning it into a commercial product.
All right. When you get people who are passionate about and have some emotional investment in a concept or an idea, they're going to engage more deeply. They're going to want to touch this thing. And it isn't just a picture in a catalog or a paragraph on a website.
It's all about passion. It's all about self-determination. It's all about the feeling of being empowered, of being in charge. What the creator needs to do in order to gain power is to give away power.
Right.
Power to the community. That's the big difference from the focus group, because members of a focus group, usually you choose, you pay, you tell them what they have to
do. You sit at the table, you watch the person at the whiteboard.
Yes, exactly.
How can a company determine what cool means for their customers?
Let's say you are Ford and you would like to understand what your new car should be.
Okay.
What you should do, you should go out and just listen and go on Facebook, go to the online car communities, hang out at dealerships.
And check out the buying process, see people interact with the product, but also avail yourself of all the online stuff that's out there now.
Sure. These days, the boundary between the virtual world and the real world is totally blurring. It's becoming one thing.
That's definitely true.
If you know what they say in Facebook, what they say in Twitter, those are opinion makers, trendsetters, and so on. And so that gives you a really great feeling of what the rest of the population might be up
right.
to.
They're the bright lights in your galaxy.
Yes.
Peter, I have a question for you. Some people might say the concept of a collaborative innovation network is a dangerous idea. It assaults the status quo and the traditional R&D.
Yes, it's a dangerous idea. It's very radical.
But how can companies utilize this concept to create the next big thing?
You need to be willing to cannibalize your existing business in order to get the next big thing.
Right.
There are many companies that are really afraid of this collaborative innovation process. On the other hand, if you are brave, you jump into the community, you become a member of this community.
Can you explain what you mean by that? Can you give us an example?
Yes. There was the campaign by Greenpeace against Nestle on Facebook. It was all about cutting down the rainforest for some palm oil, which would go into KitKat. Nestle did a great job of cool farming the response. They responded extremely well, being very honest, upfront, transparent. They became member of this community. They took their opponents that were starting this campaign in Facebook very seriously, very respectfully, and they treated them as members of the swarm. They explained the reasoning, and in the end, I think they succeeded quite nicely.
What are your suggestions for how a company can push their product past the tipping point into becoming a nationwide or worldwide phenomenon?
It boils down to finding the swarm. If your ambition is finding a worldwide phenomenon, then it's this very clever mix of leaking some of the secrets, keeping some of it. Apple Steve Jobs is a master of this. It's cool farming.
Okay, but some of this is circular to me. Isn't a good deal of what Steve Jobs does? Yeah, it's cool hunting and cool farming, but it almost becomes, now that I've done it two or three times, it's much easier for Apple to build that excitement, build that passion.
If you look at other global trends, like the World Wide Web, you can go back 30, 40 years to see how this momentum had to build up. And then after 1990, really take off. Same thing with Apple. It took a long time to reach that level of global coolness. And on the other hand, it's very easy to destroy it.
Absolutely.
So we have Apple, which is totally controlled by one person. And then we have the web, which is totally uncontrolled. And both stellarly successful. What they do, they listen to the swarm.
I'm just curious, what's your opinion on the leaked fourth generation iPhone thing? The beer garden phone?
I actually think, and now I'm just purely speculative, KitKat story and leaked phone might all be just one big plot.
Exactly.
And it works beautifully for
both parties.
It really
does.
For Nestle, that's free advertisement. And they handled it very well, almost too well.
Yeah.
But that's cool farming. You show, you understand what the attributes of cool are.
It's an awareness.
Yes.
Being attuned to those messages and signals.
Exactly.
Can you give us some examples of corporations or individuals that have tapped into the passion of the collaborative innovation network to create these wildly successful products?
Once you get the feel for those coins, you find them almost everywhere. Any successful startup starts out like such a coin, and then it goes up to huge companies like BMW, which have really passionate people that drive their cars. It's also toy companies like Lego, where they have basically outsourced all their new product development to their community. And they are on the World Wide Web extreme in the sense that they really let their community take over. With very, very low marketing budget, they have huge reach because they have free focus groups, their users that develop the new products for them.
That's interesting.
It's other things. Authors like Stephenie Meyer of the Twilight series. She is very good in using online forums, blogs, wikis, and so on, and understand what the readers are.
She's a lot closer to them. She interacts with them. She touches them.
Exactly. Touching the community.
You had mentioned the Lego example. And even a few years ago, Lego had this orientation of being a step ahead. And there was this online application they had where you could go in and in essence, build anything out of virtual Legos. But then there was a button on there that said, Lego, send me the kit to build this thing. Send me instructions on how to build it. Send me all the pieces in the colors that I've selected. Here's my credit card. In essence, send me a Lego kit to build the thing that I designed.
That's cool farming at its best. And it's also cool hunting because some of those designs might be turned into the
product
next.
Product they would roll out.
Exactly. And I had a discussion with one of their VPs, and he told me that this is an extremely successful product line. And this way of developing new products worked beautifully for them.
But they've done some other interesting things. We'll use them as a case study. There are a lot of video games out there right now that are built on Lego versions of characters from mainstream media, like the Lego version of Batman or the Lego version of Star Wars, where they will have a whole series of games and adventures. It's almost like a mashable thing where you take one sort of cultural thing and another and you push them together and you come up with this wonderful new thing that nobody even thought about.
And you know what? This is a great example of how the virtual and the real world really become one. And it works for Lego so well because the same group of geeky boys that play Lego also play those science fiction games.
Right. Before we conclude, do you have any comments you want to make on this concept of cool farming?
Yes. Particularly in this converging of the virtual and the real world, if we want to succeed, there is basically no other way of cool developing new things than empowering the swarm, which means cool farming.
Right. Leverage the power of the crowd.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Galaxy Advisors.
Galaxy Advisors is a little startup which takes the ideas of cool hunting and cool farming and brings them to the commercial world. Mm-hmm. It's also very self-organizing in that by now it's like a galaxy. We have a little group of people, mostly my PhD students, building the software and advising customers on how to be a galaxy. And by now we have an entire ecosystem of, I would say, half a dozen little companies, and it's rapidly growing, mostly also former PhD students and some friends from my consulting life that have taken the ideas and with whom we are working together when we have to do big projects. So we are commercializing it and at the same time, cool farming our own consulting business.
We've been speaking to Peter Glor, co-author of the book Cool Hunting and author of a new book, Cool Farming, both of those published by Amicom and Division of the American Management Association. Peter, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.